Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots to think about. Boy, that was fast last night, the way it came through. It was kind of scary. I hope you got some good rain out of it. I think a lot of us probably need the rain. It may have been a little spotty, though. It may have been a little spotty, so we're going to have to be thinking about rain. It was really, you know, throughout the state, there were areas that just got drenched. And other areas that got almost no rain at all. Certainly some areas that got some tornado damage and other problems. But any rate, we're moving into spring. We're moving into that time of year. April and May are that time of year when it can be very, where rain can be very iffy. So Greg's down there getting an inch and a quarter in his yard, but you know, there may be some people around Mobile who didn't get much rain at all. And that's what happens with some of these April rains, particularly because they move through so fast. And they move through in these broken lines that are kind of peculiar. The other thing is, you know, we're going to get these dry days. It's going to be chilly. It's going to be cool. And that's not a bad thing at all. Let me tell you why. Well, so we're going to get what? Maybe down, some of you are going to see temperatures in the lower 40s, maybe even 45 degrees, upper 40s tonight. Tomatoes don't necessarily like that. That's true. They don't like temperatures that cold, but that's a good thing for you. Because it's a funny thing about plants. They need a little bit, just a little bit of stress to get them going. Just a little bit of a reminder that, hey, you know, it ain't a perfect world, and if you're going to reproduce, you better get on it right now. And that's what we're eating, is basically tomato reproduction. And so it's a good idea. It's a good idea that we that you get a little bit of stress, this little bit of cool temperatures. In fact, one of the interesting things, if you're protecting your tomatoes and you've got one of those little teepees on there, and you still have a teepee on there, you're actually probably going to delay. At this point, the tomato is going to get very large. It's very protected. It's very snug in those teepees. But here's the funny part. You may actually delay the onset of bloom and fruiting. And that's probably because those tomatoes need exposure to fluctuating temperatures to get them to go ahead and start setting flowers rather than doing just vegetative growth, rather than just doing green growth. Something to think about. You know, it's if you've had a teepee on, or if you haven't had your tomatoes exposed to the normal weather temperatures, I don't know whether tonight's a good place to start. But I would take that teepee off as soon as tonight's gone, and leave your tomato exposed. Don't leave those teepees on too long. Don't be too nice too long to your tomatoes. You know, here's the other thing I'm thinking about, because I'm breaking new ground. And I every time I think about this, I think about, what am I doing right? What am I doing wrong here? Should I, you know, how much should I be breaking the soil up? They're all very interesting questions. We really don't fully know the answer to it. But here's the fun part. And I'm going to tell you a little secret about soil. You take an area, you got a place, and you found a place in a vacant lot or a place in your yard, and it's been nothing but, you've done nothing but mow it and mulch leaves on it forever and ever and ever. You kind of a forgotten spot, and you break it. You go ahead and break it. You take the weeds off as best you can. We should talk about how to do that sometime. Maybe you can break the hard pan up underneath. We should talk about how to do that. And you just plant stuff in it, and man, it does incredible. It's incredible. And you're thinking, gosh, you know, what do I? I don't even have to do anything to this soil. This soil is so rich. It is so good. It's such great soil. And then the next year, and then the next year, you plant, and everything goes wrong. It's just like everything. It's stunted. It won't grow. Nothing happens. Nothing happens at all. You get diseases are worse. The plants don't grow. You don't get flowers. You don't get fruits. What goes wrong? What goes wrong? Well, let's talk about it, because, you know, everybody's always asking me, what is the perfect manure? What's the perfect fertilizer for your garden? Tell me, it must be, is it cow manure? Is it horse manure? Is it chicken manure? Is it cottonseed meal? Is it blood meal? No. The perfect fertilizer for your garden comes from bacteria. And it comes from fungi. And it comes from protists, archaea, the little teeny tiny teeny things in the soil. And there are millions and billions of these in an acre of soil. Just incredible numbers of these creatures. And they represent, and they're all, you know, they're all doing their business. They're all, in effect, producing manure. The best manure you could possibly have. Here's the interesting thing. One of the things we now know is that when you open your soil up for the first time and you plow it, what happens is you activate all of these bacteria that normally aren't very active. They're kind of starved. But suddenly you're providing them oxygen. And they go crazy. They start taking all the humus in the soil. They got oxygen. They are feeling so good. They're eating and consuming everything. And you know what they're doing at the same time? Well, yeah. They're producing manure. Their carcasses are producing a kind of a manure too. They're producing lots of nitrogen, lots of minerals for your plants to grow. So that first time you till the soil, that first time you open the soil up, you activate all that soil life, and almost everything the plant needs is right there. Boom. Right away. But you may even notice that before the end of the year is up, that your plant starts struggling, because those bacteria act so fast and release so much nitrogen in a form that's easily dissolved by rain that, boy, you essentially wipe it out after your first spring. This is how important those bacteria are. You know, there's an estimate that that just the bacteria and other things in the soil provide the equivalent of about $700, $800, $900 per acre of fertilizer. Now, that's huge. No farmer spends that much money on fertilizer. Even if you used Miracle-Gro, which would be a huge mistake, you probably couldn't use $800 or $900, which would be the most expensive fertilizer you could use. You probably couldn't use $800 or $900 worth of fertilizer per acre. It's an incredible amount of nitrogen and other things available in that soil just as a result of the soil creatures that are there. $900 worth of fertilizer in that soil, somewhere between, let's say, $700 and $1,000 per acre in the soil. That's the most important fertilizer. So what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? You can mine it out the first year. That's what most of us do. Some of it gets used by the plants. Most of it gets washed away by our rainfall. Or you could understand that all these little soil creatures are in there, and they just need to be fed at the right rate so that they produce their manure at just the perfect rate for your plants to use. And the simple way of doing that is with organic matter in the soil, leaves, and everything else that they've used all this time to live on. Hey, we're going to talk about how to do that in your soil. It's the really important message. You know, it's not whether you use blood meal. It's not whether you use cottonseed meal. It's not whether you use 13, 13, 13. It's what that soil is capable of producing. on its own, and that's what you need to work on. Hey, we're going to be back. We're going to talk about it a little bit more. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Lotsa mozzarella with Guguza. I want to be, cause Guguza is so crazy over me. Guguza grows in Italy, they love it on the farm. It's something like zucchini flavored with Italian charm. I call my gal Guguza cause she's sweet as she can be. She loves to hear me say, Guguza, please, or botch me. My Guguza, Guguza Bella.
She's my pizza pie with lots of mozzarella.
With Guguza, I wanna be, cause Guguza is so crazy over me.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You know, earthworm poop. It was the going thing, right? Earthworm manure. It was the idea. It was the perfect manure. And at least people were sort of headed in the right direction with that idea that somehow earthworm manure was incredibly valuable and people were paying unbelievable amount of money for earthworm poop for their yard because it was the perfect poop. Well, it's, you know, I don't know that it's that way at all. Earthworms are the part of the soil community that we can see. And so we tend to focus on it because it's really easy and they're real conspicuous. And but you know, earthworms probably play a bigger role in creating tunnels and holes in the soil than they do in providing the key manure that plants need to grow on. And so if you're just putting earthworm poop on your soil, excuse me for saying that out loud, if you're just putting earthworm manure on your soil, you're missing the point because it's the tunneling activity of those earthworms that's probably more important to your soil. The real soil makers, the creatures that make the most difference are going to be things like fungi. We call them mushrooms, fungus, bacteria, various kinds of what we used to call protists, these little things like amoebas. They are playing a huge role in what's going on in the soil. There's so many of them in there, so many different kinds, we barely can describe them all. They're breaking down, they're chewing up all of the things that fall on top of that soil, like leaves and beetle carcasses and pieces of wood and whatever else, and as they chew that up, they're releasing it in a nitrogen form that plants can use. Interestingly, fungi usually have hold on to those nutrients better. When we plow the soil, we kill the fungus, we kill the fungi, which are beneficial to the soil. We kill the beneficial fungi. We tend to halt their activity when we till, and we suddenly increase the activity of bacteria. And when that happens, those bacteria just go bizarre. I mean, they just go wild. They consume everything in your soil very quickly, and you get a brief burst. You get a boom, and then nothing, because you've lost all your soil. Managing, balancing these soil creatures, that's what we're trying to do. That's what I tell you how to do when I tell you, don't use a tiller. When you use a tiller, you make a huge mistake. You make a huge mistake when you use a tiller. We'll talk about how to do that, but we got some questions this morning. Taxman, he's going to talk about loquats this year. It has been a great year for loquats. You know, as anticipated, it could be a great year for bananas. We should talk about how to make sure you have a great year for bananas when we come back, when we have a little more time this morning. But, you know, somebody, we had a caller. Is it Andrew? I've got that right, Charlie?
Yeah, Andrew.
Hello?
Andrew, I'm listening. What's up?
I was calling in reference to my satsuma tree. It have plenty of them on it, but they're falling off. I mean, they're falling off. Is it going to continue to fall off?
Yeah, the best thing that can happen to your satsuma tree is that you lose about 90% or more of those fruits. If in a year like this one, well, in any year, a satsuma or any other fruit tree will set far more fruit than it can bear. Imagine, you probably had, you had countless numbers of little fruits on that tree.
Yeah, right.
Now imagine if every one of those tried to get big, it would, they would be, the tree would just collapse under the weight of it all.
Okay.
So it's your tree knows just what it's doing. It's regulating the number of fruit that it can handle, and so that's a very good thing. You know what you really want, and Andrew, here's a good way to think about it. What you really want, ideally, is for each fruit to be about 6 inches apart on the limb. And so you actually, if you've got a smaller tree, it's probably a good idea, even after all those fruit have dropped, to go in and thin the fruit back so that each fruit is about 6 inches apart. That means the tree won't be stressed so bad. So yeah, everybody's going to see a big fruit drop this year, and it's always scary. Man, I'll tell you, it has scared me at times. I thought, man, how many fruit can this tree lose? But what really needs to happen is it needs to lose more than 90% of that fruit set in order to be healthy. It always does. And actually, probably it needs to lose closer to 98% of the fruit set on a year like this one. So that's okay. And as long as those fruits are 6 inches apart, that's going to be perfect.
And another thing, about my fig tree, you told me a couple of years ago to cut it back, and it got leaves and things all over it. This is the second year, but I don't see any figs coming on it.
Well, it's a little early for the figs yet, isn't it? I think it's early. I wouldn't expect to see any figs start setting until, I don't know what they're going to do this year. It's going to be funky, but probably in late May. So it's still a little early to see any figs. Figs, here's the funny thing about figs, Andrew. This is weird, and this is going to freak you out, but don't be too freaked out. What you're eating from a fig is not really a fruit. It's the flower of the fig. I know that's crazy sounding. I know that's crazy talk.
Okay.
But it's true.
Inside of a fig.
So you're eating a flower. So those flowers don't emerge until May and June. And they don't take long to develop at all to where they're edible. So you're actually eating edible flowers. And that doesn't take long. They usually don't start budding up. Sometimes you'll get a very early crop, which is not a very good crop. In fact, it's just a wasted crop. It's called the breba crop. It'll come on very early in the spring sometimes, and usually those will drop off, and that's good because you want the tree to save energy for that main crop, which is going to be starting. You're going to start seeing those flowers emerge in May and June, and you're going to be okay.
Okay, there's one more brief question. I plant my tomato plants in planters. When I was doing it last week, there was worms in there. Should I leave them in there?
Yeah, they'll be fine. It sounds like that soil is getting a little bit old. And that's the only thing that would worry me. If the soil gets too old, it gets a little... Soils in containers don't drain as well as soils in the ground, and there's some very good reasons for that. So one of the problems with those soils in containers is they may not have enough oxygen, they may not have enough drainage to perform well. So the only thing that worries me about the worms is that it's an indication that the soil in those containers might be a little bit old.
Okay.
Is it? Left over from last year, maybe?
It's left over last year, but this year I got some compost from the dump I mixed in there with the soil this year.
Well, and that may help enough. That may be enough. One of the interesting and this is, Andrew, boy, I keep getting in the weeds today. Go with me here just a minute. Listen, so one of the things we want with organic matter is not organic matter that's been broken down by the folks at the dump. We want organic matter that's fresh. And the fresher that is, the better it is. So one of the things, if you've got, this would be better. If you've got some areas where the, if you've got some trees or shrubs where the leaves are mostly broken down, but not quite. I mean, they're kind of crumbly. You can tear them apart, but you can still tell that they're leaves. Put those into the pot, and that will help you to get to improve your drainage a little bit more than the stuff that's already been decomposed. So does that make sense? Can you do that?
Okay. I would try that then.
Yeah, and try that, and that'll help you a little bit. One of the things is we always, and I, well, we sometimes when we think about organic matter, we think about something that comes in a bag that's already been nicely decomposed, sort of like earthworm poop, and we think, oh, well, I'm going to put that. But, you know, that's not what we really want. We want something to feed those creatures so that they create the tunnels and create those open spaces in the soil that we really like.
Okay.
So, yeah, good. Well,
okay,
so good, Andrew.
I appreciate your answers. But I drilled some holes in it all around it. Maybe that would help out.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't do that either. That's probably not going to help, but the earthworms will help. The earthworms are good. Feed them with a little bit of fresh compost, okay? Oh, look at this, man. I got to take a break here. We're going to be right back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Along about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-riding that Tennessee stud. I had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw, and one of her brothers was a bad outlaw. I sent her a letter by my Uncle Foot, then I rode away on the Tennessee stud. The Tennessee stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood, and there never was a horse like the Tennessee stud.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of things to talk about this morning. While we're on the subject of figs, because there are people who want to know. You know, I always recommend that when you're, the figs are, in fact, what you're eating is a fig flower. It's crazy. You don't want to eat, if I told you what went into producing a fig fruit, and I often tell people this, they freak out and they say, I'll never eat another fig. Because it involves lots of insect poop inside the flower. You don't want any of that. So what you're actually eating here along the Gulf Coast is just a flower. So they actually don't need a long time to develop. They actually develop on new wood. This is what we call the wood that comes out during the spring. And they develop on new wood in June and usually in maybe starting in late May, June, or July. Occasionally there will be a breba crop, we call it, which is a crop that you ignore. It's the first crop in the year. And you want to ignore all that. That breba crop was originally when the fig actually had something called sex. Figs don't do that much here on the Gulf Coast. And the reason they don't is because they have a pollinator, a very specific pollinator, a wasp, a little teeny tiny wasp. And she crawls inside. So, Chris, I'm going to do it. She crawls inside the fig. Inside, you ever notice that little fig has got a little eye at the base of it? Right there at the tip? That's what you're looking at as a fig, as a flower. The individual flowers are inside. They're inside there, and she crawls inside, and she lays her eggs and dies inside. And all those eggs hatch out, and they start eating the inside of the fig out. the baby wasp, eat the insect, and they do all this pooping while they're in there. And then they crawl out and they go to another flower and they carry the pollen with them, because the pollen, it's complicated. Boy, is it complicated. But you get the picture. But we don't have the little wasp. We don't have that little wasp. So what happens for us here on the Gulf Coast is we basically eat the flower. Now, that means it comes on the new wood. It's fine. If you trim that plant back in February and even early March, not a problem. And I recommend cutting your figs back to where each branch is not much more than eye level high, because otherwise you won't be able to pick it. And we can talk about that. And I recommend that you do it in February and March. If you do it in April, I worry about that. I think you're kind of stuck with what you got, because even though it produces flowers on new wood, I don't think it's going to give you much time. I don't think it's going to give you much time to actually deal with it and to develop the new flowers. So I don't think I would prune it back. Here's what I would do, however. I often prune my fig back twice a year, because when figs are happy. Now, there are some very unhappy figs here. We can talk about why figs get unhappy. But if you've got a happy fig, and man, my fig is just happy as a lark. It is happy as it can be. I've got to prune it back twice a year. And so I prune it after it fruits. I prune it back some, and then I give it a big pruning again in February and March. So you can prune it back after it fruits in June and July. That's fine. You'll be doing good. All right, good. And Tony has got a great looking picture of a fig, no grass around it. That's the way to treat a fig. Man, that is the way to make a happy fig. If I hadn't told you, mulch around it. We got some callers. We got several callers. I better get on the line here. Let's listen to our first text man. What's up, text man?
Bill.
Yes,
bumper year for low quartz.
Oh, man.
Let me tell you. And for the people that don't know, they're also called Chinese plum.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Now, let me tell you something. I didn't realize. Oh, I bought me one last year in a 3-gallon container from one of our local people here.
Yeah.
And I planted it.
Yep.
And yesterday I went out and cut 2 pounds of fruit.
You know, that is the funny thing. We always say, and isn't it true? How many times have you heard me say about plants, tax man, that you got to wait 3 years before it produces fruit? Well, that goes out the window when it comes to loquats.
That's right. And let me tell you, these people trying to pacify all this citrus stuff, they barking up the wrong tree. Except satsumas now. They tough. But all this other fancy stuff, that's just pipe dreams. But let me tell you something. They're green year-round. I haven't run into any insects, and they take cold weather. To me, it is the most perfect fruit. I got it planted in my persimmon patch.
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you something. I went on the Internet to get the nutritional values. They're loaded with vitamin A, potassium, calcium, and magnesium. And when you cut them, they say they'll refrigerate in the fruit drawer, vegetable drawer, for about 2 weeks. So I'm going to try that, too. But, Bill, let me say this. I've been collecting from different trees in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I'm finding this out. Some have better taste than others.
That's right.
And I'm saving the seed, and I'll germinate my seed in the hanging baskets. And for these people that out here that don't know, The fruit kind of reminds me of the white Thompson seedless grape.
Yeah, now that's interesting, and it is, and it's every loquat, every seedling loquat has a slightly different flavor than others, and some are tartar, some are sweeter. I kind of like them all. I haven't really had one I didn't like, but yeah, that's one of the things I hope we can do is to begin to get some cultivars that we agree that the flavor is really good, And, you know, that's what we've talked about, Tax Man, is finding some selections of loquat that are asexually propagated, that are all clones of the one, so that everyone has the consistent flavor. And I hope we can do that at some point.
Well, I tried to reach in South Florida through the agricultural division, the different ones, but there are a lot of different named ones, but I think a lot of the nurseries, I think they basically come propagating by seed.
They're all from seed. It is very hard to find any of the. Now, there are some clones out there. One of the problems with the clones is that they were developed for California.
Oh, okay.
And so they may not be developed for us. We need to develop our own clones. Martin Vandergeesen and I decided we were going to do that one time. We went around Mobile collecting every loquat we could find. We tasted them all. We got sick to our stomachs. We ate so many loquats. And we had a great time doing it. And we picked what we thought were the best ones. Nobody would buy them. So we kind of just sat there because we hadn't done enough marketing of it. So we need to do that again.
Well,
we need
what
a good
I'm going to do, Jeremy, I'm saving my seed from certain trees. Because I'm eating the fruit and I'm late. But see, I germinate my seed in hanging baskets.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to keep you posted because this is perfect for the spring of the year for deer, you know.
Yeah.
And with persimmons in the fall of the year, I got two real winners here for all these deer hunters, you know.
That's right.
But anyway, I'll keep you posted. But these loquats, so they are really, really good. So we'll talk with you later.
All right, Tax Man.
Okay,
good
bye.
To hear from you. It's good to have that testimonial from Tax Man. Really nice to hear. Keith, no, you don't need – I don't think you need – No, let me say, you don't need two loquat trees to get, apparently, because I see plenty of selfing going on the loquats. Keith, in a word, no, I think you'll be fine. Jeff, what's up?
I was down on Dolphin Island listening to Vaughn Drinker talk about camellias, and one of the techniques he talked about propagating was air layering.
Yeah.
And I got to thinking, I had some clear in my yard that I wasn't able to manage because of an injury, and I went out there and I've got these little 3-foot bushes that now have like 6 or 8 foot, you know, branches coming out the top of them. And I thought, I can just cut those back, or is it something I could do in terms of air layering some clear to propagate these things and be able to make some more?
Well, yeah, I'm sure that Claire would air layer. They are also kind of weedy from seeds as well. We often see them coming up around old plantings. But yes, I'm sure Claire were very easy. I would not think Claire are hard at all, even taking cuttings. Here's my bet. With Claire, if you were to take, just your trimmings and take off, get about 26-inch pieces, and pull off the lower leaves and stick those in soil in kind of a mostly shady place with lots of good organic matter, I bet half of them would root.
Wow.
That's how easy Clara was. Layering should be very easy as well. So you can, by layering, what we mean, of course, is taking a long limb, pulling it down to the ground so that the tip of that limb touches the ground. We leave a little bit of tuft of green at the tip of the branch above the ground. We bury a little piece of that branch in the ground about 6 inches back from the tip, pin it down, and it'll root. And then we cut it from the mother plant.
Air layering. How about that?
Air layering would work too. Air layering is very hard. But air layering works. Air layering works just fine.
A lot of these stems are like, you know, starting at 4 feet and going up to 8 or 9.
Yeah. You know what I would do? You could try the air layering, but just try the cuttings that I mentioned to you.
Okay.
And I bet with Clayera, it can't be that hard to propagate because it was a very popular thing to do 100 years ago when there wasn't a lot of expertise in propagation. So I think the Clayera should propagate fairly easy just from tip cuttings.
Okay, one last question for you. Some of these stems are probably about an inch and a half or two in diameter. Is it okay just to hack those down towards the middle of the plant?
Well, that's a I'm not sure exactly what. Yeah, I guess so. If you want a tree-like growth, it's probably okay. Generally, what I would do is on most plants, probably it's okay with the clay era. You don't want to leave a big gaping wound at the trunk. That would be a problem. So you want to minimize the hole where it meets the trunk.
Okay, I guess I'm not explaining myself well. I've got the basic structure of the plant at about 3 feet. And then I've got these shoots that come out, and they're coming up to like 6, 8, 10 feet. And I've gotten some pretty decent diameter on them. If I want to restructure that plant to make it look more like a bush,
reach down under the canopy and cut those off where they fork. Where the fork occurs, reach down under the canopy. You'll see that most of those are coming from forks, and some of them will be, and take off the biggest part of the fork, if you'll see what I'm saying, right where they fork out of the plant. That's the best way to prune those, and they should do fine.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good, good. Hey, Charlie, I know we got to take a break. Yeah. Whew. Glad we could do that. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Let me get back to business here. So last week, Dan sent me a picture of a plant, and I identified it for him. It's Eleagnus. You know, Tommy Dodd, T3. I don't know whether Tommy invented it, but he certainly popularized it for me. Tommy used to call Eleagnus, and so did most of the other nurserymen that I worked with, Ugly Agnes. I'm sorry. Eleagnus is a very difficult shrub. It's Russian olive. Let me just, or autumn olive. Don't, Dan. Oh, man. It's going to be a mess. It's a shrub that turns into a vine. And boy, it is some kind of mean vine. It can be very difficult. I don't recommend it for people's yards. If you do have it, you better give it plenty of room, like 30 feet in every direction. It can be very ugly, very bad, very mean. Don't recommend it. Do not recommend it, particularly here along the Gulf Coast. We don't know that it does a lot of damage out in the woods. It does in some places. I don't know that it does here, but boy, is it a nuisance in the yard. I do not recommend planting it. So there it is. Ugly Agnes. Eleagnus. Eleagnus. Russian olive. You don't want it. You don't need it. Daniel, thanks for holding on, because this is a good question, I think. I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. So my question is I've got about 30 banana trees, and about 30% of them have already yielded a flag leaf, and a rack is already sprung as of January and started to produce fruit, and then all of a sudden it stopped. So what I do now is I've got a koi pond and fish emulsion line kind of linked to everything in my garden, and it feeds all of it, but I can't seem to get any more than the first two or three hands that have produced.
Okay. Let me say this. It's we had a funny, funky winter. When there is a what we call a growth check, when there is a halt in the production of the flowers, when they stop producing, it never fully recovers. So this is why I always say, if you have flowers forming, or if you have a big trunk, and it starts during the winter, That is not going to produce good fruit. Even if it starts too early in the spring, it's not going to produce good fruit. So I really don't want to see the first fruits emerging until May or June, so that they won't have gone through that growth check in the winter. It's going to be very hard. Those that had in January that had begun producing flags and fruits, I would say the chances of getting any fruit out of those are not good. Does that explain it sufficiently?
Yeah, so are you suggesting so I should just cut off the flower that's existing there so it can continue to grow, or should I just cut it at the base of the trunk?
Yes, so bananas are good question. Bananas are monocarpic, we like to say when we talk that way. That means each stem produces one flower and then it dies. And then that means another stem has to produce a flower. So by leaving on those old stems that have flags and are trying to produce fruit, you're taking the energy away from the younger stems that could be producing fruit at the right time. So cut those old stems back to the ground, because they will never produce another fruit, okay?
Okay.
Other than the
okay.
one they're already yeah. trying to produce now. So start there. Am I making sense? You know, here's another way of think. Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interject.
Yeah. So here's another way of thinking about it. If I, a banana, because we're, just to be more specific, bananas form pads, what we call pads. And the pad is all of the trunks that come out of a single colony of bananas, out of a single clump of bananas. That's the pad. In that pad, you don't want more than one or two, or at most three, stalks producing fruit at the same time. So this time of year, choose the three trunks that are about... that haven't formed flags yet, that are about 7 feet tall, and cut the rest of them down.
Okay,
in that pad.
Makes sense. That makes sense.
And that's the simplest way to say it. If you want to be sure, and I would only leave three if the pad was very large. If it's a small pad or a young pad, I would only leave one or two. And that way it will produce all of its energy into producing a great crop of bananas in June on that stem.
And then one last question. Is there a certain type of fertilizer or anything like that I need to apply to them specifically, or is the fish emulsion fine? I know it's lots and lots of water, so they get plenty of that.
Yeah, fish emulsion is okay. You know, one of the they do like lots of nitrogen. The one of the really important things with bananas is the potassium that goes into it. Ashes are one of the best things. If you could find a source of ashes, they love ashes. So if you can spread fireplace ashes around those pads, that's the best thing. Potassium and nitrogen are the two important things that they need. They do need some nitrogen. Fish emulsion is fine. I can't remember how much potassium fish emulsion has in it, but you might want to supplement with a little bit of extra potassium, which they love.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Bill. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Daniel. Yeah, good to hear from you. Charlie, we don't have room. So we'll wait. David's got some questions that I can tell are going to take me a little bit of time to answer. So we'll work on that. We'll be back in our next hour. We're going to talk a little bit more about this soil thing. We're going to talk a little bit more about bananas. We're going to start clean with a conversation about bananas and what you need to do. If you've got questions about your banana plants, you call in. If you've got questions about your citrus or anything else right now, you feel free to call in 251-343-0106. We're going to take a little bit of break, as we always do, for the news, and we'll be right back. Thanks.
I am a poor wayfaring stranger, traveling through this world alone. There is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land.